Fred Film Radio, Festival de Cannes, France.
Angela Cherby, Fred Film Radio from the Cannes Festival, here with Ira Sachs, who had his film Frankie in the official competition. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Nice to be here.
Obvious first question, how was the experience of the red carpet in Cannes?
It was a lot of fun, and it's also kind of funny. You're with a lot of people that you know well by that point because you've made a film together, and then you're in this abstract space. I think for me, when I was nervous about it, I looked at the building, and I decided it looks a little like a convention center in the middle of Cincinnati. And somehow by bringing it down to my level, because I'm from the middle of nowhere, Tennessee, it felt more familiar and humble.
But physically speaking, like it is. It looks like this, actually.
Yes.
Then you have this aura of the Cannes Festival, the fantasy about the movie world, etc. But in itself, the building is not that nice.
Yeah, and I think
so. It's easy.
In a way, like the film, it's all about perspective, mm-hmm. right? Like, what yeah. perspective do you look at things that are very important? And you can look at them from like below looking up, mm-hmm. Like a child looking at a parent in a certain way. And you can also look at them more sort of laterally across. So like, what's just behind the red carpet? What's just you know? And I think I try in a place like Cannes to keep perspective. It's really necessary.
Listen, Ira, how did you come up with the idea and the will to tell this specific story of a very famous actress who has a terminal disease and wants to...
Can I interrupt to just say I'm recognizing an irony as we sit here talking about this festival and this film, that 17 years ago I was at this festival and I was trying to raise money for my second feature called 40 Shades of Blue, and I bought a fancy suit in New York and I came to Cannes and I tried to meet anyone who would talk to me about cinema, and I wanted so much. And mostly what I did is I walked around this terrace at the Grand Hotel that we're sitting in, and I hoped I could recognize someone enough that they would ask me for a cup of coffee. So to be back at this exact same table 17 years later is a nice
feeling. Yeah, in a different position.
After
a long career that was rewarding enough.
Yeah, and that there have that I'm still here and that I'm making these things. It's very affirming. The film is a very personal work that is about experiences that I've been close to in the last 5 or 6 years that had been new to me, which is really about being close to illness and to death. And it being totally not what I expected, expecting it to be something more singular, more sort of defined by sorrow. And what I felt, I had a good friend who had breast cancer and she died at 50, and I was with her a lot of time in the last 3 years of her life, and I just felt until the last minute we were talking about everything, and she was just herself, and she was... you know, there were sad things, of course, but there were also petty things, and we talked about money, and we talked about family, and I saw everything go on. Like, the world doesn't stop for death. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that was very affecting to me, and humbling, and inspiring, because it makes everything, again, like Cannes, in scale. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a lot of where the contrast in the film comes from, the different genres. You could call it a women's buddy picture.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
You could call it a marriage comedy. You could call it a tragic love story. You could call it a coming-of-age film.
So, yeah, because every single of these single ingredients that you just mentioned are there.
Yes.
It's up to you. I mean, it's up to the audience to select which is the most important for him.
Yes.
And for him to go on.
And I've had such different responses about who people care for in the film. And that's sort of like being in a family. Like, mm-hmm. you don't care for everybody.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, I wanted to ask you, why did you choose to make it such a ensemble piece? Because, yeah. I mean... We have Isabel Huppert, she's a lead character, but she's not the lead character. She's the leading character to the action and to the narrative.
About 15 years ago, I saw a film by Satyajit Ray, the Indian director, called Kanchanjunga. And it was about a family on a vacation in the mountains of the Himalayas. And it takes place from the morning to the afternoon, and there's a crisis. In that case, it's about a about a woman trying, a young woman deciding who she's going to marry. And I loved the film. It stayed with me forever. And I really loved the structure and the boundaries that the film set out. And so this film, in a way, is a response to Ray's film. And I think what I've learned as I've worked on that film, I've also been continuing to watch a lot of Ozu films in the last 5 years of my life particularly, is by creating an ensemble film, you in a way avoid the usual tropes of melodrama.
You're right, yeah.
Right? Because everything is relative.
Yeah.
There's this and there's that.
Yeah. So you cannot... You're not forced to concentrate on one specific drama. You have many dramas to follow.
Yes, many dramas, which sort of, again, they put them each in relief in a different way. And they also, for me, speak to this awareness of the cyclical nature of experience and of life. And being in the middle of life allows you, in a different way than when you're young, to understand there was a past and that the future might contain.
You can look both ways now.
Exactly.
While early, when you're young, you can look only one way.
It is. I believe that as a young person, it's impossible unless you've had a particular experience to understand the nature of finality.
You are putting together an ensemble. You have to focus on different potential main characters because every single part has a main character. So how did you balance this in writing, and how was it to shoot it?
At each stage of a film, you have different challenges. I often think that you make three films in the course of finishing one. You write a film and you think the script is the movie, and then you shoot a film and you go, oh, that's the movie, and then you edit the third film and that is the movie and everything else is forgotten.
The
edited version is the one that remains. And for me, in each stage, there was a question of balance and trying to figure out what was enough but not too much of a certain character, what gave you an interest with, but also ability to kind of move from one to the other fluidly. So in terms of casting, I guess, for me, it's always like a really instinctual understanding of acting styles and how they might work together. Chemistry. Usually with most of the actors in this film, I'm not auditioning them. I'm casting them based on previous work. But I understand organically what they feel like on film. So for me, I've wanted to work with Brendan Gleeson since like 2002 when I considered, he and I talked about working on a film together that we didn't end up making. And I think he's very similar in style to Isabelle Huppert. I think there's a kind of fluidity, a detail, a simplicity, a presence that I could imagine that the two of them on screen could marry.
Yeah.
Not just as characters, but as performers. And I think that was very important. They both are also people who have been in long-term marriages, which I think they bring that history, at least to me, to the film. Marissa Tomei and Greg Kinnear are two actors I'd worked with before. I wrote for them in this film. I wrote for Jeremy Renier also, sort of having a sense that he... I think you try to imagine people who will bring surprises and also who bring a lot of contrast.
Yeah. I understand. Yeah. And the meeting with Isabelle Huppert, how was it? And were you thinking about her since the beginning, or what just happened?
I met Isabelle after finishing Love is Strange. She had seen the film, and I got an email from her through a friend, and I thought it was a prank.
Say, okay, yeah, whatever.
But we ended up meeting in person and talking for at least a year or so, and so I got to know her a bit, and we ended up writing the part for her in the film. She's a wonderful person, like even more than as an actress. She's an amazing person. She's a strong person, but she has a passion for art specifically, as well as for family, that I find very inspiring and familiar. She's half Jewish, by the way. And I guess I felt a connection to her that was historical to me. It was like a way of talking was very easy for
and
us.
And did you try to involve her in the writing, in the final writing?
No.
No, she didn't. She's not the kind of actress that wants to.
No.
no. could adjust.
No, no. She, I mean, she'll have comments about certain things, but for the most part, she trusted. She wants to trust her director. I think that's what she looks for, is people that she feels that can lead her to do work that she's in which she's able to take risks. And in this film, I think I was interested in trying to see a little bit more of her than I felt like I had on screen. It's like I felt there was something very warm about her and very simple. And so I asked her to do as little as possible.
To be less Isabel and more the actress.
To be less... You know, there's a great... Do you remember Days of Heaven?
Yes.
Or so Linda Mons, who plays the girl in Days of Heaven, and she became a name when that movie came out. About 15 years later, she said in an interview that she wanted to be Linda Mons again. And I think that when you are Isabelle Huppert, people expect you to be Isabelle Huppert. And I was asking her not to be Isabelle Huppert. I was asking her to be herself.
Which is Isabelle Huppert, but not Isabelle Huppert, the public one.
It's not the persona. And also not the, not just public, less the public, less, more the performer. Mm. The performer in which people have a certain expectation of irony or distance or cruelty or any of these things. And I felt like we talked about being simple. And I think it's very hard for an actor. But also, by the way, to be yourself does not mean you're not acting.
Of course not. And there was this part of the film where she confessed to Marisa Tomei's character, her best friend, that she's going to die, which is the only moment of the film where she actually cracks. She actually shows her weaknesses.
Yes.
While we were normally in a movie like this, you're expecting that the main character who is going to die is weaker, but she's not weaker.
To me, it's not about weakness. It's about, and I would say there's one more
in terms of showing.
Well,
your
I would say the word is vulnerability.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right, and I think that in a way, you know, I think there's one point later in the film where she's observing the future, what might be the future of her husband after she's gone, which I think she also reveals, at least for me. Something, a reckoning takes place. Did you experience that at all? When she sees Marisa Tomei and Brendan Gleeson when she's on the top of the hill?
Well, no, actually not. Actually, I was more, I was looking at her watching them as a soothing part for her to see the two people that she loves that are going well together, but I wasn't seeing anything
more than that. Yeah. I think for me the film is filled with vulnerability, which is one of the things that makes it kind of, it's a sensitive film, I think.
Which leads me to my last question, because it's about the final shot.
Yes.
Which is very beautiful and very specific, though. It's not just a question of aesthetics, I think.
Yes.
Because they all find themselves there, and everyone has a specific position.
Yes.
Which is very clear. I mean, it came very clear to me.
Yes.
And why is that? What brought you to this?
You know, it's a pointillist film in some ways. It's a collection of images of different characters that only comes together in the last moment. That's the finished painting, right?
Yeah.
And that's also the whole cast. It's the cast of characters presented in a tableau format, where you have identification of them both as individuals, but also as types and characters. You recognize their clothes, their colors, they work. They tell a story in a purely visual fashion at that point, which you, because of everything that came before, you can participate in.
Yeah.
And to me, it was probably some of the... you're always blocking a film, but that was a blocking that was about telling a story through the kind of musical chairs that those characters were playing with at that moment, the way that the choreography was telling
the
story.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think also there is a... there is an understanding about, again, we go back to this concept of perspective and scale.
Yeah.
Right? Because we are all in the middle of our own story, except as I think about it, personally, I think, I've always thought that when I die, New York won't blink. There will be, you know, the wind won't even blow. And that's something.
That's something. And then actually, it gives the audience the exact like scale of relationships between every character, because every character gets to the point of the final scene in one moment, and they leave in a specific moment. So the choreography, as you say, is very meaningful under that point.
Yes, interestingly, at least to me, like, I knew that scene was coming. I found that vantage point, this very particular distance to my characters, but I didn't think about blocking it until it was like we had to do it in 10 minutes, the sun was going down. And then I kind of accessed, I used to be a theater director when I was in high school and college, and I accessed those skills like as quickly as specifically as possible, because I knew that by the placement of the characters and also on the decision about who would leave when, that I'd be telling a story. But it was totally an instinctual moment for me as someone who has a craft. Okay. And that was, I'm glad it worked.
It really worked. It worked really, really well. Well, thank you very much. Thanks a lot to Ryra Sachs for having been with us from the Cannes Film Festival for his film Frankie. I'm Angelo Cherubi for Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, Festival de Cannes, France.
Fred Film Radio,
24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.